We are excited to announce the launch of our all-new Global Online COO Alliance program, exclusively for seconds in command. We have another event next month, and if you're the second in command in your company, you're invited to attend virtually, no CEOs allowed. You can now join the monthly COO Alliance events from the comfort of your home or office and learn alongside a tribe of skilled COOs and seconds in command who are eager to welcome you. Every month we have a learning theme: marketing and sales, systems and automation, building stronger relationships between the CEO and COO, etc. Members also share resources and assist each other in their growth via private Slack and Facebook groups. We even feature prominent keynote speakers and peer presentations monthly. To join us for an upcoming online event or at one of our optional quarterly in-person events, visit us at COOalliance.com and click Apply Now to learn more. And you'll see why we have a positive 84% NPS. We are excited to get to know you too. Welcome to the Second in Command podcast, produced by the COO Alliance and brought to you by its founder, Cameron Harold. In the Second in Command podcast, we talk to top COOs who share the insights, strategies, and tactics that made them the chief behind the chief. And now, here's your host, Cameron Harold.
Our guest today is Cindy Perks, the COO for Global Mentoring Solutions. Cindy brings over 30 years of operations management experience and oversees the hiring, training, and support structure strategy at GMS. Global Mentoring Solutions offers outsourced help desk support to tech teams of various companies across the globe. Their mission is to boost the value of customer support to ensure continued success in business. Cindy has an extensive background in the e-learning community and is working to transition Global Mentoring Solutions into an industry leader in the outsourced help desk arena for managed services providers. Cindy Perks' tireless efforts as the COO has taken Global Mentoring Solutions from 30 employees to over 130 in just 5 years. So Cindy, welcome to the Second in Command podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Cameron. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So curious, tell us a little bit about what Global Mentoring Solutions does. Who are your types of clients and what kind of outsourcing do you do for them?
Well, Global Mentoring is dedicated exclusively to technical support and on a wide range of topics that have to do with IT, desktop applications. We've got three sort of lines of business. One is residential through telecommunications, partnering with telecommunication companies. And the other is help desk and NOC services. So we do the monitoring for a NOC, for a network operating center. We do the monitoring and take action on any alerts that come by. All based on the premise that 95% of the technological challenges can be overcome remotely, leaving a very small percentage where you actually have to put feet on the street and send someone to an actual site. So that's where that's our niche is in that connecting to the computer, helping the end user, getting it resolved.
Interesting. So are you like, would you be considered like first level tech support or second level or even higher than that?
We actually cover the three in the common realm. It's tier one, tier two, tier three, or level one, two, three. So we go from level one to two to three. It's our customers that would say, well, we, you know, in the telco industry, we want level one to two support. Whereas in the MSP world, in the managed service provider world, they are more apt to want level two to three.
And what kind of telcos are you working with? Are you like with the Rogers or Bell Canada or whoever our service, like TELUS, is that who you're doing work for? Or
Yes, we actually provide support for Bell Canada.
And so how do these big companies outsource this stuff? I was just coaching a company today and I got frustrated with them going, God, like you guys are 250 employees and you still try to do everything in-house. And I held up an iPhone and I said, you know, who makes this iPhone? And they said, well, Apple. And I said, no, Apple doesn't make the iPhones. They outsource that. And why are you trying to do everything? So how does a company like Bell Canada, who are massive and they've been around forever, why are they outsourcing? And how do they decide what to outsource versus keep it in-house?
I guess the best way to answer that question is, in the Bell Canada, for example, we at Global Mentoring were always in the support, always in desktop support and desk side support, but we always use chat. We have our own proprietary chat program, and we were very connected due to our career histories and experience. We were very connected to the e-learning community. So when e-learning was really getting off and going into online learning and video learning and replacing the classroom with that was very traditional, we provided the support. So a student taking a an MCSE through Microsoft would come to us when they got stuck with something. When they didn't understand something. And so we were providing that application support, but at a very high end. So our mentors, as we call them, are not agents, but our mentors knew the products better than the students because they were certified and had already gone through that. So we saw this need in the e-learning community. Now, the flaw with the model was e-learning training for end users in the corporate world is really the first thing to get cut when you want to cut expenses. It's not, we train in this country and in North America in general, we train our executives far better than we train our receptionists and the people that actually do the work. So there wasn't a big market there. And once upon a time, there was a little outfit in Eastern Canada called Alliant. And they were part of Maritime Talentel. And Alliant had a big strike. And they managers were now on the phones, taking phone calls from the end users. And they discovered that they couldn't fix everything, and applications and how to do something. How do I get my pictures, downloaded to my computer? Those kinds of things were coming into the telecommunication, and they had no avenue to provide this support.
Sure.
So they saw a need, and 6 months later, after strike was over, they approached us and said, you know, we hear what you guys do, and let's talk about providing residential support for the users. So that's how we got into it. And again, strictly chat. We didn't want to get into phones, especially with telecommunication folks. In about 2010, we said 2009, end of 2009, we said, yeah, let's add the phones. We can do it better than anybody else can do.
Oh, interesting. So you started with live chat.
Yeah, we started with live chat 20 years ago.
I remember using LivePerson was a software that we used in 1999, 2000. That was kind of, so you guys were already big into that whole space.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
And then you picked up the phone side just because you figured that you could add that in.
We could add that in and no offense, but do it better than anybody that was currently on the in that space.
Now, the call center industry has a reputation for being kind of not entry level, but minimum wage jobs or lower paid jobs. I would get the sense that you're probably not at that lower paid level when you're providing some of the tech support you're paying.
No, we're paying for talent and certification for us because we cut our teeth in the education industry. We truly believe that certifications in IT is the way to go. So we hire at a higher level we pay just under dedicated technical support that you would hire for your organization. If you wanted to hire the IT guy, you would be paying the IT guy if they had the number of certs that we require.
Yep.
You'd be that IT guy at a bit just above where our folks are, and our folks are ahead of the
ahead contact. Of them. Interesting. I'm sure you come across lynda.com as like a technical. I was at the TED conference a couple of years ago, and I was sitting beside this woman. I was raving about lynda.com and the amazing platform for technical learning. And I said, "And what do you do?" And she goes, "I'm Lynda." I'm like, "No way." I was actually sitting beside Lynda from lynda.com. I'm like, that is so random. It was kind of blew my mind. All right. So in scaling the company from where you've been, are all of your people in Canada? Are they remote? Are they global?
All of our mentors are in North America. That's a prerequisite. And, you know, we have since 2007, I closed the last of our bricks and mortar operations in 2007. We've been work from home, remote since then.
For 13 years, you've been work from home.
Yeah. And so with that kind of concept, we always jokingly say working from home does not mean you can work from anywhere. It means we can facilitate the work from home model. And we've been very successful in that regard, but all agents are North American based. We have a large need for bilingual French and English. So we do a lot of recruiting in New Brunswick and in Quebec and just outside the Ottawa region for our bilingual requirement. The rest is coast to coast and in the United States. We've got most of our MSP partners are American. And to service the American marketplace, we sometimes require only American agents and mentors can touch certain companies and certain requirements in the U.S. So we do have a small band of U.S. folks as well.
And why is that? Is it because the client likes the accent, or is it because, you know, they can chat quickly about, oh yeah, I'm from Chicago too, or I'm from Kansas. Like they can kind of connect a little bit more, or?
Yeah. There's a little bit of that. But more so it's the security side of things. Anyone that is dealing, that has any government agencies, state, municipal, or federal, they have a requirement for certain aspects to only be touched by U.S. Employees. So it's more security, but the accent and the other things do come into play. Although everybody's getting very sophisticated now, Cameron, we can't really say your accent is kind of putting us
I know. off. Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was speaking with an agent the other day from a company, and she had an East Indian accent, and I've been to India 4 times and I love India. And I was like, I know this is a weird question, but like, are you from India? And she goes, we're not allowed to say. I'm like, no, I don't really care. I just like, I love India. And where are you from? She goes, no, I just can't say, but I could tell that she was, because she was kind of laughing on the other end of the line. Yes. I've kind of gotten over it. As long as the support is good, I don't care where you are.
Exactly. Right? We believe that you have about 30 seconds to gain the trust from the end user who's having trouble.
Right.
They're calling, they're frustrated. There's nobody calls the help desk when they don't need help. So, you know, that there's we really place a lot of emphasis on that first 30 seconds, making sure that that's good.
And so really, Yeah, that was something that 1-800 Got Junk that we obsessed over, and we kept trying to go and learn from WestJet because they were really wowing us on the phone, and we kept trying to learn from their call center groups. So how do you wow people in that first 30 minutes, or how do you get the kind of can you give us some of the secrets or some of the systems that you use to do that? Or is it just more of a mindset that you try to set with the mentors?
It's a mindset. And one of the things that we don't play around with the IVR, which means that we don't give you a greeting that's, you know, phenomenally well recorded, and then you wait and then you wait and then we connect. You're connected with a technician right away. And that's important that you know that this technician can help you. And you're not going to be passed around and you're not going to be put on hold, that you're speaking with an expert at
right.
that time. And we just try to avoid the cliches. We try to, avoid saying, this call will be maybe recorded for quality control. We say this call is recorded for quality control because we use it for training as well. And, those kinds of things. We just try to stay away from the quote unquote.
That's the stuff that drives us all crazy too. It's like we were dealing with one the other day where my girlfriend was in Colombia, had her phone stolen, had to get it replaced. And the agent knew that. And I had to patch in my girlfriend. And she starts off with the script again, like, how's your day going? It's like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, we're 3 days in, you know, my phone is stolen. My day's shitty. How's your day going? Like, can we please get past the script? So question for you on the call center side again, or with the mentoring. When they start identifying patterns, you know, it's the same customer, the same question, the same problem. Do you report that back in to the company to say, hey, by the way, if you fix this, we'd get 20% less calls? Like, do you help them with that at all?
Yeah, we do.
Which has got to be hard because you almost put yourself out of a job if you do that well.
Well, and here's the thing about that. You asked me earlier about how do we set our sights on getting a company to outsource to us. One of the things, the key things is when you're hiring the IT guys, you're hiring a really large plethora of brain cells that have technology inside of them. And you're paying them to create revenue opportunities for you at a higher level, when reality is the people that need the help are at the lower level. So now you've got this IT guy that can work up a new topography on a network better than anybody. And you got them answering, I can't, my printer won't print.
Right.
So this is where we can end with
my coffee cup holder is broken, right?
Exactly. So we try to take away the non-revenue bits and identify those. And then they can add value to their customer by going in and saying, you know what, that printer's been down like 4 times this month. It's time to replace it. Because your productivity is being affected.
So, and that probably does build the loyalty with the company as well when you're becoming more of a partner with them than you are a call center.
Yes.
So you've got only 150 employees.
Yeah, we do.
And what's your turnover or attrition like with your employees? Is it high? Is it reasonable? Do you benchmark that into the industry?
Well, our attrition has been extraordinarily good. I just actually looked at a report today that the number of employees that we had before 2016 versus we've had a phenomenal growth in the last 4 years. So we have doubled our number of mentors in the last 4 years. And so we've got the new or the old, and we very rarely, we call our agents from time to time, and we insist on them continuing to learn. And, lifelong learning, like I said earlier, we cut our teeth in the e-learning industry, but we truly do believe in it. We drank the Kool-Aid a long time ago, and we try to keep our employees current with their technologies and their need to learn and keep that. If you don't keep your technology current, you become stale very quickly. Mm.
Now, do you outsource your recruiting, or do you do that in-house, or do you do a bit of both?
We do it in-house. In fact, we just separated recruitment into a separate category. Today we call that talent acquisition. And so we have just this past 2 weeks, we've been training a gal that will do only recruitment. Mm. That's her expertise, and that's what what she'll be doing for us. So
yeah, and it is such a different skill set than other areas of HR. That, you know, it's kind of like saying that, you know, just because I'm a quarterback for a football team doesn't mean I'd be good as a kicker. Like, it's still, right? Like, you wouldn't be at all. Like, it's, yes, you both play for the team, but you're completely different roles. Or, you know, kept throwing the ball and catching the ball. So I'm curious whether the trust, I don't know if this is the right word, or the acceptance with your customers is growing higher. The fact that you're, now let me rephrase this. Was there ever an issue that you were at home-based tech support prior to COVID? I'm guessing post-COVID, they're like, doesn't matter. But was there ever anything before that where they're like, weird, you're not in an office? Did that ever go against you?
A couple of times we had to address the elephant in the room this gives us some of the things that come out of marketing and spinning are things like, you know, think about the geographical disbursement of our workforce. So if there's a hurricane in New Brunswick, then, you know, our folks in Alberta can pick up the slack. And so we're geographically situated that we can cover off any of those regional challenges that come up. So you
did find ways to spin it back then.
We did, absolutely. Yeah. And we said, you know, we're our security. We, you know, we go over the top on security and so on. And we record everything that happens on the desktop of that mentor when they're working for GMS.
Sure.
Their keyboards, their voice, we watch their activity. Big Brother's watching. We watch their Googling. All of those things are watched. There's very little. There's very little that goes on that we don't. We don't know about.
Well, I would guess that now that issue has been completely erased. I mean, I was speaking with the second in command for Wikipedia the other day, and they've got 450 employees. And she said she told all 450 employees to not come back to the physical office space until July 1st.
Yeah.
Like, that was just like, this has been got to be game changing for you on the sales and marketing side.
Huge. And one of the things that we noticed, though, is because we were we were already at home, we did not have to orientate our staff to being at home and to working from home. But we had an influx of people that were dispersed to their home office from a big office. So we're supporting one network, one server, and now we're supporting 300 small little and, you know, independent little areas while they got it all together. And we were extremely busy April and May, extremely busy.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And our staff, we've had to become very creative in trying to give them what they used to have. They used to enjoy their 8-hour shift, and then they could go to the gym. Then they could go out for dinner. They could, you know, they had way more social.
Oh, wow. Now they can't.
Now they can't. Now they're at home. And not only that, but they were working from home by themselves. The kids were in school. Well, guess what?
Oh.
They're there now. So,
oh, interesting.
You know, there were things that came up that made our job at the top a little more difficult.
So you did have to adapt then as well. Like, that's interesting. Yeah, you were already work from home, but with different parameters. Now you're right. That would throw everybody into a bit of a tailspin, right?
Correct.
Yeah. They used to work from their daughter's bedroom, and now their daughter's home. It's like, oh shoot, now what am I doing?
Now what do I do?
Yeah, interesting. That's really interesting. So talk to me about the onboarding of employees. I know the recruiting of and interviewing of them remote is easy, but the onboarding of remote employees, what have you learned over the years in doing that?
We've learned that although people say that they're well set up, they're not. We find interesting when we're interviewing, we find that the bigger the gamer, the more technology that they have, the more security they have themselves, and those kinds of things. So that's pretty good. We've used Zoom since Zoom was beta. We've had it. We love it. Our CEO is quite innovative and, martini shaken, and he wants new toys all the time. So he's constantly, but we always go back to Zoom because it's very reliable, meets our needs and so on. And so we just, we Zoom with everybody, and we Zoom with our new employees. And when they're in training, the things that are digitized are, meet the team and so on. And but we do try to interject with more meetings, both Wayne and myself, Wayne Goldstein is our CEO. Both Wayne and myself will attend the MSP team meeting, and we'll meet with the mentors and listen to their challenges. So you've got to have really big ears. Mm. Because you're not overhearing anything. You have to be conscious. True. About hearing.
That's interesting. Yeah, you really got to be proactive about trying to hear, because you're right, you don't overhear at all.
So that's what we try to do.
That's really interesting, actually. I hadn't thought of that yet as anything, making a note on that. So interesting. Yeah, I started using Zoom right around the same time, because I was always frustrated with Skype, and then when Microsoft bought Skype, I'm like, and exit stage right. Yeah, I'm gone. But Microsoft has kind of come back full circle now. They're doing a really good job. They seem to have got Microsoft Teams seems to be working right now. So I'm not using it, but I think they got a chance again. So how about your development as a leader over the years? Where do you think you've grown the most as a second in command?
I would have to say in the last 5 years, I've grown the most. Prior to that, there's so much to learn, and sometimes learning doesn't necessarily mean growing. I look back today and I think what I can provide my team is wisdom and expertise. As long as I don't overdo it with the back in the day, or we used to do it this way. You have to be very careful about that, because that gets stale very fast. Yeah. But with the people coming up, I always like to think that I've allowed for a succession strategy, in that, people coming up in the ranks, there's a couple that could be very good second in commands one day. And so I see my job is to make their expand their vision, look all around. Operations people tend to be so very focused on one area. So I like to encourage the ops folks to walk a mile in the sales shoes and see it from their perspective. And most of all, see it from the customer's perspective.
It's interesting. Starbucks does an interesting job with that at the leadership team level. They've got about 45 people at their C-suite and executive VP level, and they make people change business areas every 3 years. That if you're running like EVP of something, 3 years later, you're running an EVP of a completely different area, because they're always trying to cross-train everyone to, I guess cross-train them as one, but also just to be more empathetic of the whole business as well.
Well, if you don't see, one of the few reality series that I actually enjoyed and learned a lot from was the show where the boss went undercover, Undercover Boss.
Undercover Boss, yeah.
I found that extremely fascinating, because my CEO does that a lot. Like when COVID first hit, we were getting very busy and not able to know, is the retention of these customers, are they solid? What's going to happen? First of all, we lost all hospitality, and so
right.
on.
Right.
So business from a revenue perspective is going down, but business from a incoming call and incoming chat perspective is increasing dramatically. So how do you make those two things fit? And being a private kind of a boutique, our CEO said, you know, I think it's time for us to look at, and we had just started our 20th year in business, and we had just started focusing on a book by Gino Wickman, the
Traction.
Traction. And yep. And looking at the entrepreneurial operating system. And so right people, right job, right people, right seat, right time.
Yep.
So we clung to that and we looked at, you know, in all of our areas and we, to make sure, like we looked at our quality assurance team and we said, let's use this time to look at what we talked about a little earlier. Look at those quality incidents that are coming in. How can we proactively minimize the quality incidents? And so we looked at a couple of our knowledge base was one area. So we looked at ways to improve that and go back to our partners and say, you know, you need to beef up your documentation in this area, in this area. And that would, that would alleviate quality frustration at the end user level. Then we looked at our escalation procedure and we said, we have an approval process. We've got a group of people that just sit there all day long and approve escalations. What about we stop doing escalations and repurpose those folks and so on? So we had a tier of managerial folk that were able to go back to the front line and in different capacities, but help that whole call thing. So we did a pivot and looked at each of the jobs at all levels and said, do we have the right folks or not? And surprisingly we did. And some that we repurposed at that point really flourished. And I don't see us ever going back to the old QA at all. I really don't. I really like what we were able to accomplish.
Yeah, there's something always felt off with me on QA as well, which is if we were doing it properly, we wouldn't need QA. So why don't we do it properly and then eliminate the waste, right? Do you see AI starting to change your industry in terms of the support being able to provide by, you know, having computers provide the first 80% of the support? Most of it sucks right now, but...
Well, I mean, I'm just chuckling because one of the things I said last year at about this time, planning for our new fiscal year, I said the A in AI is artificial, so you know we ought to start looking at our areas collecting. How do we mine our knowledge base?
Right.
The robotic goes away and the information that we're giving to the AI product actually has some foundation in reality. It's real data.
Yeah.
That's the challenge right now, is getting that data
into
an acceptable format.
I think we're still a few years away from it, but I think the adoption is going to be very fast. Whereas there's, you know, it's like, I rode in the very first Google experimental car 10 years ago at the main TED conference. And when the guy from Google was doing the TED talk, and then he said, if you want to go drive in it, it's outside. And 1,800 of us, like Bill Gates, everybody stood up and went running out the door. And I'm like, what is going on? And then I rode in it. I was sitting beside Matt Groening, the founder of The Simpsons, was sitting beside me. And we're like 12-year-olds. We're like, this is amazing. But we're like, you know, this won't even be around in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
3 years ago, my Tesla drove me from Seattle to Vancouver and drove 90% of the miles on its own. Like the adoption is coming and it's faster, but yeah, so it's not there yet then. How about you and Wayne, the CEO? How do you stay on the same page together? How do you, what do you do in terms of systems or mindsets or date nights? Like, what do you do to stay on the same page with each other?
We have our fireside chats. One of the things that I have never underestimated was there are two, in my world, my thought process, there's two COOs. There's the ones that have their operational agendas, their processes, they're, you know, respectful of EIDL and ITSM and all of those other wonderful process and procedural components. And then there's a COO like myself. My role is to deploy, implement, assist the CEO's vision. He's truly an entrepreneur, has always been a great innovator, and has never, we joke about the fact that he has always been right on the mark, always. So we sit, I give him certainly some guidance, point out some risks, but together, I hear the vision and then we discuss how we can deploy and implement it and then take it to the masses. And it's through that collaborative method that served us very well as a team, I think, in the last 20 years, for sure.
It sounds like a huge amount of trust between each of you to stay in your own lanes too. Like you're great. As long as you know what his vision is and then he knows what your plan is, you're both good at just that handoff is really fluid.
It is. It just happens naturally.
All right. Let's go back to the 22-year-old Cindy. She's, you know, graduating college and she needs some advice from her future self. What would you tell the 22-year-old that now you know to be true, but you wish you'd known back then?
I would say don't spend the first 15 years of your career following the rules. Spend the first 15 years of your career understanding why the rules are there and finding, is there a better way of doing that? Become more efficiency and proactively empowered. Right out of the gate at 22, I think that would have changed me for the better all the way along.
That's amazing. I love that. That was actually one of the core values for a company out of Vancouver called Nurse Next Door. One of their core values was find a better way. And they really wanted people to break the system in like to just to ask questions, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Don't take it as gospel. It's not necessarily, it can be rewritten.
Yeah, that's amazing. Cindy Perks, the COO for Global Mentoring Solutions. Thank you very much for sharing with us on the Second Command podcast.
Thank you very much, Cameron.
You've been listening to Second in Command, brought to you by COO Alliance founder Cameron Harold. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe. For more best practices from industry-leading COOs, visit COOalliance.com.